Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So hello and welcome to Charlton Live. It's yet another lockdown podcast for you. My name is Louis Mendez and we've got a packed phone line as we get ready to get our teeth stuck into some of the issues of the day. First up, let's bring in the grand old man of Charlton Live. It's Terry Smith. How are you doing, Tel?
Fine, thank you, Louis. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. How's your week been? Are you all gearing up for a barbecue or something?
Actually, no, we probably will. We haven't made any plans, to be fair. It's, it's that type of situation we're in, where we just get out and you can't really plan for anything. Just see what the day brings and feels. So, yeah, we might do it. Now you put the idea in my head, I probably will.
Well, that's because that's what we're doing later, because we got sent off like our first ever barbecue. I had to put it together last night, so that's what we're doing tonight. So I'm looking forward to it.
So you put it together, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I know. Gas explosion in Sid Cup reported soon after this podcast goes to air. Who else have we got on to? We've got Mr. Benji Cloak. How you doing, Ben?
Yes, Louis, all good, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. You've been down the training ground spying on them, haven't you?
Yeah, I had a look, saw what I was doing, but they had to maybe spy on me because I played a bit of foot golf, so maybe get in the team after my performance.
Oh, well, I heard you came last in that, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
We'll talk about that another day. And finally, we've got Lewis the Cat on the phone. How you doing, Luke?
Yeah, all good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for coming on. How's your week been? It been all right?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. I just got back from an 11-mile run, which I'm starting to think that was a massive mistake because I can't move.
Did you get lost?
No. Just set out to do a certain route and then about halfway round thought, why am I doing this?
Yeah, good idea. Right, okay. Well, let's have a look at some of the stuff we'll be chatting about this week then. Of course, with the takeover, I can't remember a show where we haven't talked about takeover rumours in the last 5 years, but there are more takeover rumours, so we'll try and delve into that, try and find out what's going on at the club in terms of that sort of stuff. We're going to hear from Heather McKinley from the Supporters Trust, as the Supporters Trust revealed their Our Club campaign this week. They launched it, so we'll discuss that with her. And then we'll have a quick break, and then we'll talk more about the football side. I don't know if it's just me, but it's starting to sound a bit more positive that we might actually play a bit of football again. You know, this time last week, I was convinced we wouldn't, but I don't know, it seems like we might. So we're going to hear from Lee Bowyer and Jason Pearce as the players have returned to a form of training this week, and we'll discuss how we can see the season playing out. But first things first, let's go into these takeover rumours we've been hearing then, Terry. Obviously, everything's still very much up in the air. There's as is the way with these things on social media, there's been people predicting that it's going to happen tomorrow or yesterday and whatever. But, I mean, we've seen names strongly linked now, and in particular, Hugh Jenkins, the former Swansea man. I mean, he's had his name linked, and well, from the outside, I mean, you see a man who did a good job at Swansea. Obviously, it ended quite bitterly between him and the Swansea fans. But from the outside, a man who's done a good job, who seems to have his head screwed on. So you'd be wondering, why on earth he'd thinking of taking over Charlton?
And you said it's the way takeovers go. Certainly the way Charlton takeovers seem to go. Nothing's ever easy, is it? Nothing's ever straightforward. And looking at the way that the deal was organised with Southall and Namir with De Châtelain, the way they've managed to get us into this situation, you do wonder why anybody would be mad enough to try and unpick all that. But Hugh Jenkins, as you say, is a football man, so if it is him and he does come through, but you know because he's a football man and he seems quite sensible, he's quite rightly not just jumping in with 2 feet, as he said. He's got to unpick what the situation we're in. He's got to know what division we're in, so he knows what he's dealing with. And I'm wondering if that's a little bit of negotiation, perhaps, because if he takes over ESI, he's got to take over the deal that they've arranged with our Belgian friend. And he's got to cough up 50 million in 5 years' time or whatever it is. So he might be just doing this with about the division and the situation with crowds, etc. Maybe just putting that in place to renegotiate. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way it's played out this week. I mean, because as is often the way with tabloid journalism, you know, the story was put out that it was going to happen this week, Ben, and then obviously. Particularly in the situation Charlton are in, you don't expect any takeover to be a, you know, I mean, I think Hugh Jenkins had admitted he'd been talking for a while to the owners, but you don't expect anything to be turned around in about even 5 or 6 weeks because of how complicated the mess is behind the scenes at Charlton.
Yeah, I think as Terry just said, like these things we've been used to Roland being the owner and that took a while for him to take over. I remember the rumours about that. And now we're at a time where everything's up in the air. Will we actually get playing? As you said, it looks a lot more positive that we might get playing now. So, because if we're not going to play, then it looks like we will get relegated. But then if we do play, I think we've got a good chance with a fully fit squad. So he's got to stand back and watch the proceedings at the moment to see what will happen. I don't know if Nimmer is going to accept a lower offer if we do get relegated. So it's so much stuff to look at. But he is looking more positive. As you said, he's a football man, which he's got good experience in the game. He looked like he did well with Swansea. I know some of their fans weren't saying some great things about him, but it's surely got to be better than what we've had so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you talk about Tanoon accepting a lower offer, but I mean, any offer for the club in its current state is bizarre, really, because the club is worthless. You know, it was purchased for £1 just a few months ago, wasn't it, Lewis? So I imagine it's more with Hugh. He's taken a step back and seeing what proceeds, because he doesn't know what state the business is going to be in. He said himself, he's been looking for a while to find the right opportunity and spoken to Charlton. You know, there's obviously lots of good things, but there's problems to overcome. You know, in terms of, you think about the fact that the club doesn't own the ground, the extra complications with the ex-directors' loans and their legal challenge that's going through at the moment, and of course, as we know, the fact that there is going to be no fans in a football stadium for a while at least, and we don't know what division we're going to be in, Lewis. So anything, all of those throw spanners into the work, which would make it very confusing as to why a sensible businessman would want to jump on board before they know how a lot of these things are going to transpire.
Yeah, and the thing is, the amount of hurdles that there are as well, and given that Hugh Jenkins has got a track record, it kind of, you look at it and you think, is he really going to make the jump now and rush into purchasing the club? Because, you know, as you mentioned, we don't know what division we're going to be in. You know, if the season plays on, we've got every chance of staying in the division. But if it comes to it and they think it's too dangerous and it ends and we go down on points per game, then there's, you know, the loss of revenue for dropping into League One. And, you know, we don't know when we're going to be allowed to go and have any gate receipts with supporters in stadiums with the pandemic going on. There's the ex-director loans. There's the, and as you say, the sort of the liability to own the Valley and the training ground that's going to be paid off in 5 years or whatever. I think it's 55 million or something. There's a lot there, you know, on face value. There are a hell of a lot of things to work out before he would commit. And as you say, like any sort of purchase of the club is going to be a profit to Tanoon because they purchased it for £1. So ideally, you know, I think that Hugh Jenkins coming in with £1 million, I think it's reported, it's a sensible offer from his side to purchase a club with the stature of Charlton, because you only have to look away from the mess that what we actually have as a structure. We have a Premier League worthy stadium. We have a great training ground, a great academy, a great, you know, a good squad, a great young manager. There's a lot of things that are attractive about owning Charlton. It's just that there are all these sort of hurdles in the way that have been put there by owner, you know, by Roland de Châtelet, by Tanoon, in such a short space of time over the sort of a 6 year period, that it's become that little bit less appealing. And do I think that'll affect it going forward? Potentially, because if you're a sensible businessman, then you're going to want to wait and see at the very least what division we're in next season, and if they maybe announce when supporters can be expected to go back into games, because that's a lot of revenue for a football club, especially in the lower echelons of the Football League if we get relegated. And then maybe make the decision on that. I think that any sensible businessman would do that. So I'm trying to be patient. I'm trying not to get too excited, but it is kind of refreshing to see somebody with, you know, experience in owning an English, you know, a football club in the English division being linked with our football club. When Tanoon and Matt Southall came through, we knew very little about Matt Southall from the Bolton and Bury stuff, but we knew absolutely nothing about Tanoon Amir, and we kind of judged him on that he was this Middle Eastern businessman and kind of expected that he would pump millions upon millions upon millions into the football club. But I think we've realised now that that isn't everything, and all we want is a little bit of stability and somebody who can come in and keep us, you know, keep our heads above water and make us at least, at the very least, competitive in the Championship and then push on from there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, of course, Terry, that Hugh Jenkins won't be the only person out there who's had interest in the club. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the time you get people who are probably operating slightly under the radar and there'll be various different levels of how successful they could be at Cheltenham. But I mean, there will be plenty of people interested in the club over the course of this time, because it is an opportunity, if you can get over these complications, to, as Lewis says, to run a club that's got plenty of potential.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I agree most of what Lewis said. I think that the one thing slightly different, I mean, there are supposedly two or three others that are interested, but if they're all of the calibre of Hugh Jenkins, because that's, you know, we've been missing somebody of the calibre of Hugh Jenkins. It's the sort of person we'd like to have owned our club for the good few years, and so we wouldn't have had to put up with what we've had done for, you know, we wouldn't have put up with De Châtelet or the previous regime at the end and the current one. If we'd have had somebody of the calibre of Hugh Jenkins to take over the club, who is a football man. I mean, he's been a football man pretty much all his life, so and did what he did with Swansea. Yes, he sold them out to the Americans, but he didn't leave them destitute, did he? Which is almost the situation we find ourselves in. I think we are in a strange proposition. No question about it. I agree with Lewis 100%. I think the slight difference I've got is that Hugh Jenkins would know that we're in a relegation scrap, regardless of the current pandemic. Yes, the crowds coming in are an issue, but I think our revenue, gate revenue, is not the biggest factor in our survival or not. If we were selling full houses and we were charging 500 quid a season ticket, maybe, you know, for the company. But I think he's playing ball a little bit. That's my gut feeling, is that even if we play again, we might still be relegated. And the crowds might not come back for another year. In fact, now, my feeling is this is probably the best time to try and buy a football club like this, because he's more in the negotiating position, a stronger negotiating position, because he can say, well, hold on, no crowds, League One football, and you want 50 million, not a chance. So if you want to get it off your chest, you want to get it off your hands and be done with it, then this is a sensible offer. Now, the problem we've got is that he's had people come at him like that before, De Châtelet, and offered sensible money, and he's turned them down. So we've got to hope there's some sort of change in tack there.
Yeah, and that's, like I say, that's something we've been hoping for a long time. The only thing that is quite interesting, I will come back to you, Terry, because obviously you've been talking about how Hugh is a football man and he did achieve a lot at Swansea. But a lot of the Swansea fans have been warning Charlton supporters about Hugh Jenkins after the way he left the club. And you say it seems to be built around this sale to the Americans, and I don't think they're too happy with the way the American group run the club at Swansea. That's my brief reading of it. Now, do you think that there should be a case that, I mean, we should be reasonably wary, because when fans of another club warn you off someone, it's sometimes you don't really know what to make of that. Because I remember when Katrine went up to Sheffield Wednesday, and obviously the Charlton fans were saying, you don't know what you've got yourselves into. But the Sheffield Wednesday fans were at the time saying, well, you know, maybe Charlton fans can't be trusted. I mean, you automatically hope that whoever's going to come into your club is going to be doing the best for the club. But, I mean, is it wise that maybe we should heed warnings of other supporters who've had dealings with someone in the past?
Oh, I think it's always wise to not be quite as, gullible as we have been in the last few years. But I think the situation is totally different personally. Look, I mean, I haven't read chapter and verse on everything about Hugh Jenkins, but it seems to me picked them up when they were at the bottom division, League Three at the time, and he took them all the way to the Premier League. Now, at that point, then he probably, I don't know exactly, but I'm thinking he's going to need more investment to try and maintain the position in the Premier League. Didn't quite work out, obviously. I think a lot of the Swansea fans seem to me to be upset that he sold them to the Americans, who then lost their identity a little bit, and they went from being a community club, which they are in South Wales, to being more of a corporate entity and not caring as much for the fans, and I don't know, maybe ticket prices went up and everything that entails, to try and stay in the Premier League. So they might think he bailed out too soon and sold them to the wrong people. That's entirely possible. But you can't, I don't think you can wipe away all the good that he's done for that reason alone. But should we be wary? Absolutely, yes. But only more because of what we've been through rather than what opposition fans may say. And we're sort of in a position where beggars can't be choosers, really. We're, you know, from where we are, and where we've been in the last, I don't know what we're talking about, getting up 7 to 8, 10 years. Anybody with a football nous who can pick us up and get us back to running as a sensible football club again, even if it's only in the short term, is good enough for me at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny. I love the phrase "beggars can't be choosers" because I mean that there have been a couple of names in the last week or so, Ben, that even us as beggars are getting very choosy about, because I mean we talked about it last week, Lawrence Bassini. You know, he had made, well, it did sound like last week that he wasn't going to progress with a deal. All of a sudden, he spoke to Richard Corley early on in the week and said, well, he has a deal with, and with Sky as well. He says he has a deal with the owners for Charlton, and he's going to try and decide whether he wants to go ahead with that or go back to trying to buy Bolton. And then as the week progressed, it sounds like he's pulled out and Panorama have said, well, he was never going to buy us anyway. But yeah, that is a case of beggars being choosers, because no one, I mean, some of the characters that come out and link themselves with our football club whilst we're at our lowest ebb, it's amazing how these names keep popping up in football, Ben.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like you'd expect the Oysters to be linked with us next. It was like, sometimes you wish you don't have social media likes where you had that Alan Nixon at the Sun saying something. And then there were rumours coming in about Jenkins and stuff like this, and you thought, well, please, I'd much rather Jenkins over Bassini. I mean, you think, what are these people doing? Like, what is their goal in trying to own a football club? We've already seen you, like, Watford fans really dislike Bassini. Bolton fans don't want him there. I mean, can't he see that that's the case? I mean, what is his goal?
That is the questionable motivations of a lot of people in football, and you know, including our current ownership, because we saw what happened when they came in. Is that no one really understands that they certainly don't give the impression that they're in there for the success of the football club, do they?
No, it just seems. I mean,
or have the ability to provide it either.
Yeah, I mean, now with Southall and Nimmer, like, what was their goal from the get-go? Because their relationship broke down so quickly to a point where they're like, Tanoon said he wouldn't put in any money with Southall there, and one minute you're setting up an enterprise to, I don't know, well, they were saying all the right things to take us to these big heights of the Premier League and all that, and then suddenly their relationship had gone. So you think, well, what was your goal at the start? Why has it broke down so soon? And with someone like Bassini, who's been involved with Southall before and involved with football clubs, and it just like, well, being Bolton, as I said, Bolton fans don't want him. Watford fans spoke so bad of him. And then you look at Jenkins, Swansea fans saying some bad stuff about him. But as you said, I think more like Jenkins reminds me of someone like Richard Murray. Now, I think if Richard Murray then was linked with another club, you'd have Charlton fans going, oh, no, you don't want him, do you? But if we look at Richard Murray's history at Charlton, I mean, it's a brilliant history. I mean, he helped save the club. He was great with curbs at the club and stuff like that. But recent years, it doesn't seem like Richard Murray's had our back as fans. So we look at that and think, oh, well, you wouldn't want Murray. Well, Swansea fans saying that to us about Jenkins. So he seems like a more stable person to take the club forward, where I really don't know what a Bassini or a Nimmer or a Southall's goals were, because it's just not, they're not football people, whereas yeah. Jenkins has kind of been there, done that, this is how you do it, so it gives us more inspiration that this could be a more viable source.
Yeah, and that's a good a good comparison there, I imagine, between Richard Murray and Hugh Jenkins, because, you know, as you say, I mean, Murray's tenure obviously started off reasonably well, but now if you ask the majority of Charlton fans, they as you say, they wouldn't recommend him to anyone else. But, I mean, before we just go into the Q&A that went out this week, Lewis, I mean, I've got to tell the story here, because we're talking about why people want to see themselves linked with football clubs. And there was this one name that came up. I put this story on Twitter during the week, but this name, I mean, I got DM'd on, what day was it? Maybe Wednesday evening, I think, or Tuesday evening, whatever it was, the day before it all came out. Someone saying, I've heard about a bid for the club that's sort of being stonewalled and being ignored. And I was like, okay, tell me a bit more. But the people making this bid really want it known out there that they're trying to make a bid. They want the fans on side with their bid. So I was like, all right, try and find out some more for me and get me some details. And this person found out the name for me, a guy called Joe Caller. And I'd never heard of the name off the top of my head, so I stuck it into Google, and then straight away, like, light bulb went lit up above my head. Joe Caller, Gateshead, the team that got kicked out of their own stadium last season and sold all their players, and the fans were revolting, and I think the staff were going unpaid. Okay, so why does someone like him want to have his name linked with Charlton? So obviously I read that, I thought, I'm not getting involved in this, I just ignored it. And then the next day, I always sit with TweetDeck open, and I have the hashtag, the Charlton hashtag open, just to see what's happening. And within 10 minutes, three different people all tweeted saying, oh, I'm hearing Joe Caller's in for Charlton. Anyone heard that? And I thought, oh, that's funny, considering yesterday he was trying to get people to put his name out there. So sure enough, I did a little bit of searching into these three accounts. Those three accounts had never mentioned Charlton ever. They had some sort of link between themselves, i.e. they followed each other or they'd spoken to each other. And they were just blindly tweeting about it. I had a look. One of them was a former non-league goalkeeper, which is interesting because Joe Caller did have ties in non-league football. Another one was a brand new account that I'd never seen before, and then put the question out twice, has anyone heard of Joe Caller? But the fact is, I mean, clearly this guy's got no link. The people discussing it have no link to Charlton. Someone, Joe Caller, for some reason, wants his name linked with the club. So there must be, Lewis, something in people thinking, well, if my name gets linked to the club, then I'll look important. So maybe that's part of the motivation for a few people. It's just bizarre, the world of football ownership.
Oh, it really is. And as you say, you put that out to us in the week in our WhatsApp chat, and I'd never heard of him. And when I looked him up, I was thinking, oh, my word. Like, it doesn't come with a great reputation, does it? And it's just, I'm similar to you. You know, I don't understand why people just see. It seems like anybody and everybody can link themselves to a football club these days. And like the actual passion for the sport and wanting to do well, you know, own a club and take it places, just seems to be dead, and just see the people that are in it for the money or for their own ego or their own boost, their own gains. That's the way I see it with Southall. There's no way, at the start he came in all singing, all dancing, like fans all singing his name and blah, blah, blah. Less than a month later, really, we were starting to get a bit cautious and concerned about the transfer window. And then after that, it went full circle, didn't it? You know, and you only got to go a couple of weeks further on than that. We're outside the valley watching him get taken out of the boardroom. So it's one of those things. I look at it and think, it's just, there's so many characters like the Southalls, like the Joe Callers, that they're in it just because they like the lifestyle. Like, they just want to say they're in a football club, drive around in flash cars. They don't care about fans. They don't care about how the club does. They don't care, as long as they get their money out of it. I mean, the fact that they paid £1 for our club and they're trying to, you know, flog it for £1 million. What's that, 3 months? You know, we'd all do that. If I'd have known that, we could have all put a quid in each and sold it, taken the profit each. It's just crazy. And it's upsetting to see, because obviously it's more sensitive with us because we've had a rocky ownership under Roland for such a long time. And the excitement that we all felt when that takeover went through, you know, we were all feeling optimistic. We were expecting a big January transfer window. And we didn't deserve the letdown that followed. And you know, look at the club now, and it's an even worse state than it was when Roland was here. And we didn't even think that was possible when this ESI takeover went through. So you just want people like that to stay away from the sport, don't you? And as we've touched on already, and Terry mentions quite rightly, that we're crying out for somebody like a Hugh Jenkins, you know. And all these like criticisms from the Swansea fans are things that have followed after his tenure ended. You know, you don't hear a huge amount of things that they disagreed with when he was in charge.
I think there was a transfer policy that they weren't too happy with, but I mean that does tend to happen at every club, doesn't it?
Clubs, yeah, exactly. We know, well, we're not happy that we lose some of our youngsters, but unfortunately some of our players are going to outgrow. You know, Joe Gomez, we weren't happy with the sale of that, but even under any normal ownership, Joe Gomez was always going to go to the Premier League. You know, things like that where you think like you kind of have to give a little. But yeah, we're crying out for somebody that's got proper footballing experience, and hopefully that's the person that comes in and takes the club forward and not another Matt Southall or a Joe Caller kind of character.
I'll just dive in quickly to the Q&A then that the Trust had with Marian Mihail, and it's interesting that this week, and we'll hear more from Heather in a second, that the questions have been opened up to larger fan groups now as well. So you know, the different supporters groups, the regional ones will be invited to put in their questions as well. So if you're a member of a group or you know someone in a group, I'm sure you can put forward your questions to the directors to find out a bit more. But I'd say the main couple of points for me is they couldn't identify who the third party is involved in the takeover at this moment in time. There's a drag through rule, which means that because Panorama holds 65% of the shares in ESI, and Matt Southall only 35%, it means basically that whatever decision Panorama take, as long as Matt Southall is given the same price for his shares per share, then he has no way of blocking a sale. His shares are just dragged through as part of the sale. So that's important, because I mean that is one way that, you know, Matt Southall could have dug his heels in if he wanted to. But at the same time, you know, we've seen Tanoon hasn't been entirely honest about this takeover anyway, because he's been saying for weeks that the club wasn't for sale, when we now know that behind the scenes it's been going on anyway. So that's some of the interesting points. And the other thing was the date, because of course Hugh Jenkins' mate, and I haven't got his name, so I think it was a Dutch guy, former football hooligan, who had something to do with Swansea, was getting all vocal on Twitter saying, oh, tomorrow could be a good day. I mean, he's just turned out to be another bloody social media idiot, basically. He's promising stuff and hinting stuff to Charlton fans when he's in no position to do so, because it's become clear that the notice given to Matt Southall for a sale was on Friday the 22nd, and there's a 10 business day rule, which means they have to give that notice 10 days before anything can go through. So the earliest anything can happen is June the 8th. So anyone who was promising it was going to happen tomorrow was wrong because of that, because there's still this process or this waiting period to go through. There, the liabilities of ESI will remain the same following the sale, which means you'd assume that any agreement with Roland currently will remain with ESI. So when, presumably, if ESI are the entity being bought, then that means that they'll still have that agreement, whoever comes in with Roland, although presumably they might be able to renegotiate that if they want to. Finally, the Range Rovers thing, which was just stupid. Apparently, there's still two Range Rovers out there, which at some point had been used by Mr. Southall when he hasn't returned voluntarily. So that casts some major doubt on that Daily Mail story that Tanoon Namir was gloating about the other day, and it just shows that you really can't trust anyone involved in this process, because no one seems to be given a straight answer. Right, so the other interesting thing, Tel, obviously the Trust have launched their Our Club campaign this week. We'll hear some more from Heather in a few seconds, but an interesting campaign where people can put their name down. You know, no money has to change hands or anything at this point. Just put your name down to show that you'd be up for helping if it ever came to the situation where the club has to be bought by the fans. And that's, you know, we've seen Charlton fans come together over the years when various problems have come up, and this seems like the first step in another version of that.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Anybody, I think the Trust has got in the region of 2,500 members, paid up members, something in that order. We paid the fiver to be part of the Trust, but this is, as you say, something completely different. It's just that to recognise your interest and say, so if it comes down to it and the likes of Hugh Jenkins doesn't get it over the line, and there is that then potential for administration or the club disappearing because it can't uphold its obligations to the league, then if there's enough members willing to, I don't know, I mean, they mentioned the 40,000 at Wembley, but if you even half that to 20,000, and if those 20,000 can rustle up enough cash, excuse me, to just do what Hugh Jenkins was going to do, and buy the shares off as you say Panoramic or ESI or however it works, then at least that's enough to keep us going.
Certainly. Right. So I mean, the new campaign came out during the week, and obviously I thought it'd be good to have someone then on from the Supporters Trust. So I spoke to Heather McKinley this morning and asked her to tell me a little bit more about the R Club campaign.
We launched it on Monday. I think people may have noticed at 16:54, which was the exact time that Bowers winner went in the 94th minute at Wembley just a year ago. And I think the main drive behind it is obviously the situation the club finds it in right now. I don't need to go into all the details for everyone, but obviously we're in quite extreme jeopardy. We've got a mess of ownership. We don't really know what's happening with that. ESI have given notice of the sale. The Valley is still under De Châtelet's ownership. There's other legal action pending from former directors, and we're under investigation by the EFL. So really all of those things combined, as the Supporters Trust, we've been very aware of the brewing situation, and we'd already started research actually quite a while ago into what would happen if, as fans, we needed to step in and try and fundraise to help save the club. We decided that now was the time to launch, given all of the things that are going on, and also the anniversary of Bowers' winner. And at this stage, it's really testing the water. We've asked people to sign up on the basis that we might have to take steps to own the club we love in future. So we're not asking for money at this point. We are very much just trying to make sure that we've got people signed up who we can then contact should it come to it and should we need to fundraise in future.
I mean, has there been a process in place? I mean, you mentioned you've done some sort of research into what would go into the fans owning the club. I mean, how far along the process are you in that? And have you found that it could be something that we could achieve as Charlton fans?
Well, we've done quite a lot of research into what other clubs have done, and two in particular that we've looked at quite closely and spoken to people involved are Portsmouth and Heart of Midlothian in Scotland. Both of those are clubs of, I would say, quite similar size and scale to Charlton in terms of their history and their fan base, so their average attendance, their overall catchment area. So in that sense, we think they're the most appropriate ones to look at. In both cases, they stepped in and saved their clubs from administration, or once the club had gone into administration, and then helped the club to continue from there. And in both cases, they did that pretty much in partnership with other wealthy people. In Portsmouth's case, they had the Supporters Trust raised about half the money, and the other half came from a group of about 15 local businessmen called their presidents. And with Hearts, they've partnered with Anne Budge, who actually was, again, a wealthy business person in Edinburgh. She just sold her business and she bought the club out of administration, but on the basis that in time she would hand over ownership to the Foundation of Hearts, which is the fans group. When it comes to Charlton, I think people can think it's quite a scary idea. Could we own the club? And obviously the sums involved these days, the tens of millions of pounds that are talked about, make it seem a bit pie in the sky. But if you go back, it's not necessarily as scary as we think, because when you go back to the most successful time in our recent history, through the return to the Valley, through the 90s into the mid-2000s, the club was effectively owned by fans at that stage, again, albeit wealthy business people. So I think we're not totally daunted that it's completely unrealistic. Equally, we're very aware that there would be big challenges, but we just want to be as ready as we can. And it's as much about getting the support from the ordinary fans who turn up to matches, but who would hate to not have Charlton in their lives. And through that, potentially to also pique the interest of people who maybe have more substantial sums to bring to the table. So whether we're looking at, if we do need to do something, whether we're looking at some form of outright ownership model or some form of partnership where fans have a stake in the club, we're very open-minded on that.
I mean, obviously we've seen the power of a group that has plenty of members signed up, and and the, like I say, the power that brings, because I mean the Trust has been given this place at the table to ask the questions weekly with Marian Mihai. I mean, how useful have you found that process with the directors? Because obviously, I mean, you can only ask the questions, and it's then up to the current directors as to what the response is. Is there frustration at times that you don't always hope for the clarity that you are seeking out to see?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do our best to put forward questions, and we've asked the questions from fans, so it's not, you know, they're not just questions from the Trust board, for example. We try to pick up on the things that are most commonly being asked by fans and put to us that are of extreme importance about the future of the club. We put those questions on the weekly basis. Sometimes I think we have managed to uncover information and get insight that we wouldn't otherwise have received from them. And certainly around the process that's going on at the moment with the sale, I think in this week's answers, we've got quite a lot there that effectively it's not a certain situation. NEMA has basically given notice of the sale of Panorama Magic's share, and that he's given that notice to Southall on the basis that drags him along in the sale. But who exactly the sale is to, whether or not it's 100% certain to happen, all these things are still up in the air. We know the club have actually contacted other supporters groups and asked for questions more widely this week, and we're very pleased about that, because it, you know, obviously gives everyone an opportunity to put in their questions, and you know, we'll continue to be part of the process in trying to understand what's going on at the club, and that's really what we're aiming to achieve through this line of questioning. And it is good that we are at least getting some answers on a regular basis from the club, so that's far more communication than we had under Du Châtelet, for example.
So thanks for joining us, Heather. Just one more thing then, so we just need to point out how fans can sign up to the Our Club campaign.
Yep, if you go to the Trust website, www.castrust.org/ourclub, or follow us on Twitter or on Facebook, and there are plenty of links, and it'd be brilliant to get as many fans as possible signed up. You don't have to be a Trust member to sign up. We're not asking for any money or anything at this stage. It's really just put your hand up to say you care about the future of Charlton Athletic, and you'd be ready to step up if we do need to take action.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's Charlie.
Yes!
Yes! Oh, he's got! Oh, Patrick Barr! The absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, too!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be here!
Here at Wembley!
Oh, my word! Oh, my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, so welcome back to Charlton Live. Thanks to Heather McKinley there from the Supporters Trust who explained a little bit more about the R Club campaign. So let's turn our attention now back to the football side of things. We're going to hear actually from Lee Bowyer and from Jason Pearce. They spoke to Sky and to the club respectively this week. So we'll hear from those two in a few minutes. But I mean, as I said at the top of the show, Ben, noises seem to be on the media that it feels like it's more likely now that the championship will play on. I don't know when the vote will be, but you know, people paying for all this testing to go back and start training. I'd be surprised if they then say, actually, no, we don't really fancy playing after they've paid all this money. So it's looking more and more like games will go ahead. Is that the vibe you're getting as well, Ben?
Yeah, I agree. I'm buzzing for it, to be fair, but I think the Premier League are trialing it. Sounds like by playing the two games that Arsenal, Man City have got a game in hand, and I think is it Sheffield United, Aston Villa, from when they played the League Cup final. So they're going to play them first, see how they go, and if there's no problem with that, then can't see why we can't go ahead.
Yeah,
really,
because it looks like Steve Gallen told The Athletic that. You know, Charlton will be aiming for the 20th of June, which is the same time that the rest of the Premier League clubs will start again. So that on paper sounds like they in sort of behind the scenes set something in motion to start playing games again. So it feels to me more like, I mean, we've seen it out in Germany. Obviously, they've had a slightly different reaction to the pandemic than we have. But, you know, we've been watching these games on telly as well, Ben. And it's not the same, sure, but for us as fans, it would be nice to have some football back.
Yeah, it'll be fun as well, having some summer football like to watch as well, like put a TV in the garden, sit out and watch it or something like that. But yeah, it obviously isn't the same. I was just watching Sky Sports News this morning, and you got a couple of pundits on there giving their Gabriela Bonhoeffer saying, I think some players will play better in an empty stadium. And then Mark Schwarzer saying, oh no, I think players will play worse because they buzz off the crowd. I mean, for us as a team, look, I think I heard Bowyer say in an interview, I don't know if you got it on this interview, but where he basically says, like, look, we got a fully fit squad and we haven't had a fully fit squad for ages. Mm. So we're going to benefit from that. And yeah, I mean, the main one is we'll probably typically beat Millwall when no one's there.
Yeah.
So we can't probably enjoy it. But look, as you said, it's going well in Germany. I think they're on their fourth game this weekend back from the lockdown. And I haven't read any reports saying, oh, this player's out today because they've got COVID-19. Like, seems like it's going well. And what was it, four people tested positive out of the EFL, out of the Championship in the last testing? And I think they're meeting again Monday to discuss, like, are we ready to push ahead now? I think the next stage will be contact training, I think, because that's what the Premier League have now done. So, yeah, look, it's the only way we're going to stay up, it seems, to play. So, obviously, of course, we want it to be safe. And the German League are showing us that it's going safely over there. So, yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, and that is the relief tale, because, I mean, we were talking to last week on the pod, and I mean, Tom and Nate got themselves riled up because last week we were under the impression that, well, that's it, we're done because the vote will go in and we'll get relegated. But it's seeming to me slightly more likely now, like I say, that the games will go ahead. So we have all of a sudden got this chance to stay up, which is, I mean, it's big for us as a club. You know, with the caveat that we'd much rather it's make sure it's done very safely first, but It gives us a chance to play our way out of it, which it looked like we weren't going to get.
Well, that's true. I mean, a lot of people were jumping to conclusions. I mean, League Two just said, "All right, we're just going to call it a day." But nobody was ever going to be able to make a move until the Premier League decided what they were going to do. Because if the Premier League decide that they're going to finish the season and play it, and they're going to have promotion and relegation, then every other league has got to have the same. Whether they play or not, then promotion and relegation has got to filter down through. If the top league does it, it's got to. They've got no choice. So the fact, I think, that we've been almost a fait accompli, I suppose we've got no choice. We've either got to play it or we're going to get relegated. So from our point of view, it's the best case scenario. From a personal point of view, it's going to be really weird. I mean, to actually not be able to go and watch Charlton live is something that I haven't done for a while. So that'll be a little bit strange. But you're right, I think, and Ben's right as well. You know, it'll be in our hands, and I think with Boyer and the squad we've got, it's the best chance we've got to avoid relegation.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we'll hear from Boyer in a second then, Lewis, but we heard during the week that he said that three players hadn't come back to training. Now, I think, judging by what they then said on the website, it sounds like two of them have. Tom Ahmed had to get back from Israel, and Matt Smith was up with Man City at the time. And then it's just David Davis who's made the decision that he doesn't feel safe. Now, I mean, you hold your hands up. You can't say he's wrong for doing that at all, can you? Especially considering the extra effect the virus has had on the BAME community and he himself being part of that community. And the fact he's on loan from a team, you know, he's on loan from a team in the Midlands, so we don't know where he's based at the moment. Is he going to have to be travelling up and down? You know, to be you can't really hold anything against him for making that decision.
No, not at all. And in any other walk of life as well, if, you know, we've all been sent to work from home and stuff because it's not, we've not felt comfortable to go in offices during lockdown. And some people, even now, some of my friend group are due back in the offices, but companies are saying, look, if you don't feel comfortable, then don't. And everyone's going to feel differently. Some people want to get out there playing. Some people might not want to put their families at risk, and you have to respect the decision of individual players. To be honest, I thought we maybe would have seen more people refuse to play. And I think that, you know, now it's down to sort of the one player. I'm sort of really, really impressed with the sort of the fight and the determination to go out there and do a job and try and keep us in the division from everybody in that squad. But at the same time, I also don't begrudge David Davis for maybe not feeling comfortable to do so. I think there'll probably be a few more conversations had with him to see if he changes his mind. But if he doesn't, then we have to accept that. But in terms of the actual numbers, you know, Benji touched on it there with the squad. Like, when is the last time we had a fully fit squad? You know, Lewis Page could be getting some minutes, hopefully. I really hope that he does. For Sikowski, like, there are so many players that seem to be out all the time that are now in and about and fit. And, you know, to see Lyle Taylor training as well was a bonus for me. I thought that he may be one of the people that wouldn't do it, but he did. And that shows that, given his contract situation, he's still got fight to try and help us stay in the division, and it's really impressive. You know, they're all doing it. You can see that they're doing it because they want to help Lee Bowyer out, and it just shows the respect that they have for him. And it's going to be paramount in our, you know, if and when this season plays on, it's going to be absolutely paramount that connection between Lee Bowyer and the players are getting us out of this mess and trying to keep us in the Championship, because that's going to be not just essential for us as a club, but also for any future owner, as we discussed earlier on in the show. So let's keep our fingers crossed that the football gets played and played out fairly, because I agree with absolutely everything Tom and Nave said last week. To finish it, you either null and void it, or you play the 46 games. You cannot end it after a certain amount of games and relegate teams, because so much can change in that tail end of the season. People can get players back. People might have a leg of, you know, a run of home games that they end up stringing a run together. There's so much that can change. So Let's hope that the season gets played out fairly, and that we really, you know, knuckle down and get us out of this relegation fight, and let's hope we're a Championship football club by the end of it all.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, we're going to hear from Jason Pearce in a bit. Let's hear from Lee Bowyer now. He spoke to Sky during the week after the players returned to training, and he was asked how that return to training has gone.
Very good. Successful day, really, with all the hurdles in front of us. So, yeah. I think the safety side of things would work well behind the scenes, and that all came together. Came in, got tested yesterday, and then we managed to do everything we wanted to on the pitch. So, it was a good day.
What was the process like getting in? Was it a bit longer than normal? Was it a little bit time-consuming?
No, an extra 30 seconds, minute doing the swab, taking the temperature, and that was it. So, it's not that difficult.
And the players responded well to it?
Yeah, it's part of it now. It's going to be part of the routine for the next however many weeks. And they took it on board. They realised what's going on, and this is what we have to do to play.
What was it like seeing everybody yesterday? I mean, I suppose you've been in contact with your players, but it's not the same as seeing them face to face and seeing what shape they're in as well.
Yeah, it was good to see them. Obviously, it's been a long time. They were smiling in the beginning and then laying on the floor in the end. So, but it was good just to have that camaraderie again and seeing everyone face to face, and so no, it was good, and they're all in good shape. So over the moon.
Did you want an intense session first time you saw them? Was that part of the plan? Was it an intense session?
It wasn't too hard, but it pushed them. They've been running for I don't know how long now, 8-10 weeks or however long we've been off. So they've had the odd week break here and there, but yeah, fitness wise they're in a good place. So now we've just got to get them used to the ball again. Hopefully the contact thing will resume soon, and then it'll be even better. But yeah, with the little groups that we've got at the moment, it's tough for them, because there's only so much you can do with the small groups, and it's always going to be intense because there ain't many bodies around. So but they've took it on board. They enjoyed yesterday, and looking forward to today.
Have all your injuries cleared up now, Lyle Taylor included?
All the injuries cleared up just before we finished. Our only problem was getting minutes back into them, because obviously once they come back after long injuries, they're limited with like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and we had to build them up. And just as we finished building them up, it got called off. So yeah, they've all been fit for however long now, so we're ready to go.
Tough run before the enforced break. You dropped into the bottom three. Is this a chance to reset then? Is it almost as if it's like a new season?
Yeah, it's going to be a 9-game season now, and teams who get the most points are going to remain in the division, and I feel that we're going to be ready once that starts. And like I said, we've got a full squad, which we didn't have for a long time. So I'm looking forward to getting back playing again.
How confident are you that you can get out of the situation? Because it's very tight down there, isn't it?
I'm very confident. I believe in the players that we have. We've proven when we've got a full squad that we can compete with all the teams in this division. So we was in a bad place at one stage, and that was just purely down to the numbers of injuries that we had. And once we started to get a few back, then we started to pick up results again. We went to Forest and got a good result, on a Tuesday or Wednesday evening. So, we'll be ready. And like I said, I believe in the squad that we've got to get us out of this.
In terms of what happens from now, we're moving a step closer to getting those games played. You've been vocal on it already. How important is it that the season's seen through to a conclusion?
Well, I think it has to happen, because everybody signs up to a 46 game season. To finish it now would be wrong. Especially now we're back, we're training, we're testing. So I think now that we're testing and everyone's spending this money, I think that would play a big part in it, because otherwise it'd all be a waste. I think the DFL have said that they want to finish the season, and it's important that we do that. And hopefully we'll follow in suit and manage to finish.
Has it eased some of the stress the last few months of the ownership situation? Because that was getting very difficult, wasn't it, towards that enforced break?
Yeah, obviously it's a difficult situation, but the things that we can't control. These are things that are happening behind the scenes, and all my job is to focus on the football side. And now we're back playing, going to be back playing and training every day. That's something that I can focus, the players can focus, and whatever happens behind the scenes, that will just take care of itself, I'm sure.
Are you concerned about scheduling? Because, you have to cram in a lot of games in a short period of time if you're going to have as little impact as possible on next season.
Yeah, that, obviously, not having the biggest of squads, that will affect us a bit more than others with stronger squads, that's just natural. But I think the most important thing is to finish the season, and we have to adapt. And we've had to do that all season, and this is going to be no different.
How's the testing regime going? Have you had any more tests here in the last couple of days? Has anybody come back negative?
No, we got tested Saturday and everyone was negative, and then we got tested yesterday and I've not heard yet, but I'm guessing everyone's negative, because the doc said that he would let anyone know that if they was positive. So as far as I'm aware, we're all negative again.
Just finally, how was it for you over the last few months? Did it give you a chance to sit back and reflect on the season and reflect on your players and what you might have to do this season to stay up?
Yeah, it's a long time to not do a lot. So watch some of the games back, see where we went wrong, where we made mistakes, and then we've got time to put them right. So like I said, they're a good bunch of lads and they want to work hard and they want to learn. So the most important thing is that this club stays in the division and it's going to be in our hands. So we can't ask for no more than that.
And it's going to break for Vetticelli again in the area. Cross ball to Taylor! It's 3-1! And Charlton are running away with it here at the Valley!
Charlton Live. So there we go, Lee Bowyer there talking about the return to training. He seems pretty pleased with how it's gone. Obviously, it's a very different situation for them now, Terry. It must be quite confusing. Especially at the start when the players aren't allowed to be in full training, in contact training, they aren't allowed to give each other a high five, which I'm sure they like to do. It's all part of the team spirit. So it must be slightly weird the way they've gone back into this completely different situation. But having been in lockdown for so long, I imagine for many of them it was nice just to be able to get back out there onto the grass and start getting involved with stuff again.
Absolutely, yes, and wouldn't we all like to be in that sort of position as well? But I think had players had our squad, especially, not been through what we've been through, most of them have been there for the promotion through the playoffs and at Wembley, and then even the new players have been through a decent proportion of this season together. So I think that bonding would have already been there. So I think we're fortunate in that respect that they don't, you're not getting strangers into the camp that you don't know, and so therefore that bonding isn't necessary. And I think, playing behind closed doors, I think you mentioned earlier, is an issue. But I think especially for us, the players have always said they feed off our fans, but you just get the feeling that, the squad we've got and the people that lead them, Bowyer, Gallagher, Jackson and all the backroom team, they've got this already between them, so they don't, the crowd play an important part, yes, but you still don't think Bowyer will let it get away with anything or substandard performances. So I'm reasonably hopeful in that respect. It is a strange one, and I think that's still decision might still have to be made by some of the players. A lot will depend on see how the Premier League go and if there's any spikes in cases or if there's any, spike in the national case or international cases. That still might change players' minds because, you've got the likes of Jason Pearce, just heard from, you've got George Lapsley, they've got partners that are pregnant. You might have people living with slightly more vulnerable elderly parents, who knows? So there might still be some decisions to make as we go through the few weeks and before we even get to playing that you might see another few drop out, and you wouldn't blame them one bit, especially if you get that spike. Nobody's necessarily expecting it, but it's not impossible, and I think we might still have to have a slight air of caution as to how we go through the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the actual football, Benji, I mean, how much of an effect do you think this enforced break will have? I mean, I know the club have been talking about trying to put together a friendly or two to try and shake off the cobwebs a little bit, but you go that long without playing. A pre-season isn't normally only two games, is it? So I don't know if we saw it a bit in the Bundesliga first weekend. It might take a couple of games really to get back to your full fluidity on the pitch.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that hopefully these couple of friendlies that looks like Gallen said in The Athletic that we've organised will help us get up to speed a bit. But I guess we're all at the same stage. All the championship teams may be a bit rusty and it might take us a while to get going.
That was one of my theories. That might mean that form goes a little bit out the window. And a team like Charlton, who are sort of struggling a little bit down the bottom, could end up playing a team who are doing well and maybe find them still not at full strength. I mean, you see it in pre-season. I've seen us lose to Welling once or twice. That would never happen in a normal game when everyone's in full throw. I mean, if everyone is still in this pre-season mode, Ben, I mean, I guess we could try and take advantage of that and catch a couple of teams a bit unawares.
Yeah, definitely. And as we go back to it again, with Bowyer saying we got a fully fit squad, and it's quite rare for us to have had that. And I mean, the Middlesbrough game was the last game we played. I mean, we all remember we didn't play very well that game, and Middlesbrough were down the bottom with us, and they took a vital 3 points off us, and we didn't have many players playing in that game. And now if we're going into the next game, look, do you know what? Reinvigorated, forget about the form before we've gone into this game. That means for nothing. It's like a new season, really. It's like a little nine game tournament. And come on, here we go. We'll start again, start afresh, and with a fully fit squad. And Lyle Taylor saying he's going to play, I think that's a massive thing for us, because he's paramount to our team. And with Lyle Taylor up front, he can cause many defensive problems. And if they're a bit rusty, then hopefully we can take advantage of that.
Yeah, certainly. And the fact that we will have these players back then, Lewis, you know, remember how well we played at the start of the season. Mentally, that'll be a big thing for the team. I mean, that'd be great if we could return to that early season form and end up finishing about 10 points clear of the relegation places, wouldn't it?
Oh, 100%. And then that just backs up the point that we had last week. You know, anything can change. And I know that, as we've said, the form's a little bit different, but at the same time, anything can happen in these divisions. And I think that I have every faith, if we play this season out and we've got a fully fit squad, yeah, they're going to be rusty, but we were so good at the start of the season. I was so impressed. Even at Blackburn, when we were sort of a little bit bare bones then, because we hadn't brought in, you know, the likes of Cullen, and I think it was, there were a couple of people we hadn't brought in by then, and we were sort of a little bit minimum when it came to the players that we did have, and we still managed to grind out a result up at Blackburn. And then from there, we went on this really impressive run. Anything can happen, and I truly believe that we've got it in us to stay in this division. And if the season gets played out, it's the perfect opportunity for us to sort of turn our fortunes around. And then if we do stay up, sets us in good stead going forward for the future. And I really do hope that'll be under a decent ownership that can give us the stability we need to really kick on as a football club. Because, you know, let's hope this whole coronavirus pandemic and the scare of the season ending and us get relegated again is the last thing that we have to go through stress-wise as Charlton fans. And let's hope that we can kick on as a football club, put the past behind us under a new ownership and really push on. That's the dream, isn't it? So
yeah, dreams aren't always reality, though.
No, especially when it comes to Charlton.
Excellent stuff. Well, we've been saying, trying to imagine how it must be like for the players back in training. Well, let's hear from one of them then. Jason Pearce spoke to what's left of the club's media team and was asked if he enjoyed his first day back at training.
I wouldn't say it was fun. No, it was obviously like good to be back, see all the lads, see all the familiar faces. Obviously, we've been away for a long time, really. It's been longer than what we'd normally get off at the end of the season, so it's been quite weird. But no, it was nice to be back and see everyone, and then obviously straight back to work, really.
And speaking to the manager, he said he was very impressed in the shape everyone was in. Is that something that you noticed as well?
Well, I said that to the manager, like, the stuff they've given us to do while we've been sort of in lockdown has been really tough, to be fair. So, like, we've worked pretty much since day one, since we've been in lockdown, all the boys, and then we've had to send our data back to the club, to the fitness guys, to show that we've been doing it, and everyone's been doing it. So, yeah, we've got a level of fitness, but obviously today and coming back now, we're getting the ball straight out, and it's all the ball work now, which is a different kind of fitness. So, it's what we obviously need. So, yeah, no, it's enjoyable.
How did you find that period of sort of working in lockdown by yourself, I guess, and finding the motivation to keep up that training?
I don't find it too hard. I've got quite a good self-motivation. I like working hard and seeing the sort of gains you get, and I enjoy it. So, yeah, like, it was tough, but I didn't find it hard to motivate myself to get out of there.
One of the things I'm sure Charlton fans who follow you will have seen as well is some of the exciting stuff that you've been able to keep your family doing during the time off, the time off as well. How was that, being able to maybe spend a little bit of extra time with the family?
Yeah, it's been great, really. Obviously, try and think of positives with the current situation, and that was obviously one, being with your family a lot. You know, I'd get up most days. I'd get up early before they're awake, go out and do my running and hard work, and I'd be back sort of after breakfast and to have to be with them the whole day. So yes, obviously, like I said, I think obviously a lot of people know I'm a family guy and I enjoy my time with my kids and my wife and stuff. So yeah, it was enjoyable.
And back to training, obviously you're known as one of your strengths is how physical you are. What's it like sort of training without that physical side and without that physical element?
Yeah, obviously doing obviously a lot of the ball work without the physical side is, yeah, it's difficult for me. I like the physical side, like you say, like everyone knows. So I'm looking forward to getting back to being able to tackle and push people about. But no, obviously it's important you get the touches on the ball and get that back, because it becomes second nature. But also, when you haven't kicked a ball for so long, you're a little bit rusty when you come back. So yeah, the more we do, the better we'll become.
And one of the things the manager said as well was how sort of positive the team spirit seemed to be in the camp. Is that something you noticed as well?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, straight away, obviously, everyone's pleased to see each other. Obviously, we have to keep our distance, so we can't be high-fiving. But no, everyone's pleased to be back. And I think, obviously, everyone wants the football back on. Obviously, the players, it's what we love to do. So yeah, we obviously want to play, but obviously you've got to be careful and abide the rules that have been set out. But no, it was great to be back and see everyone back. And yeah, I think everyone's looking forward to it.
And there's nine games left. Is that all you're focused on at the moment then?
Well, my focus obviously personally right now is just to try and get as fit as I can and try and be up for selection for the manager, and not like everyone else really. But we know we have to stick together. It's going to be a tough run in once the games start coming, and be obviously a little bit different with potentially no crowds and stuff like that. So again, you've got to sort of motivate yourself to do well as individually and as a team. So it'll be different, but no, we'll make sure we're ready, and obviously Bo and the coaching staff and fitness guys will make sure we're physically ready as well.
So there we go. Jason Pearce speaking to Tom Rubichaud over at the club on his return to training. Good to hear from the skipper. So finally, we touched briefly on obviously what it's going to be like for the players, but Terry, you did mention it yourself, how strange it's going to be for the fans. I mean, I currently have no idea what the situation is going to be for the media as well. I mean, I can't imagine there'll be too many of us allowed in, if any. So I don't know what our situation is going to be. So it's probably probably likely that we're going to be sat at home. I imagine the games will be streamed. We don't really know what the fixture list is going to look like either. I imagine they'll try and stick it in the same order it was due to be in. But again, you don't know these things. Likelihood to be a fair few midweek games by the sounds of it. So that's plenty of that up in the air, but it will change for a lot of fans how they view games. It'll be a case of sitting down and watching it on TV, which is something that, I mean, a lot of fans aren't really that used to at all. It'll be a completely new way to support the club.
It's going to be bonkers, isn't it? You're going to have, and bearing in mind the weather it's likely to be, that all the windows will be open, so you'll have tellies on and grown adults and kids screaming their heads off in front rooms all over the country, well, certainly over the southeast. It's going to be weird. As for the media, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, aren't the German games being commentated from home, and from the BT
Sport commentators seem to be doing it in their bedrooms, which they've somehow...
That's BT because they're an international broadcaster. Whether that's the same for German broadcasters, I'm not sure. So it'll be interesting to find out how that pans out, but we're secondary. I mean, I'm guessing they'll have a generic one Sky commentator doing it from a studio in London somewhere, and that'll be it probably. And then the media and reporters and local press will have to just pick it up off the telly, I'm guessing. That's my gut feeling with it, but I've not heard. But the fans are the most important thing, and as I said before, it's just going to be weird. I mean, I think I've only ever had to watch one game on the telly in the last X amount of years. That's because I was either away or on holiday, I can't remember, but that was strange enough. So to have to put up with doing it, like, how many games have you got left? Nine, is it?
Yeah.
Nine games of watching Charlton on the telly is going to be really weird.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, Ben, obviously you go to the majority of games as well, so you'll have to change it. I mean, one thing, obviously, with the atmosphere being non-existent at games with no one in the crowd, some people have been talking about, would they pump in crowd noise? I mean, do you think that would make a difference for you?
No, I don't think that would work, to be fair. But I've seen some German games have put Zoom crowd up behind.
Yeah.
And or they've done cardboard cutouts. Obviously, Charlton can't afford to do any of that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's going to be strange. I guess we've got to look for the positives. And as Terry said, watching it in the front room, sunny days, windows open, probably like smashing up the sofa when someone misses an open goal. But yeah, look, we've got to play to stay up, so hopefully it stays safe and we're able to do so. And it is going to be strange. I don't know, it's going to be even stranger for you boys not being able there to commentate, so you're going to have to get a little crowd in. You could do a little Zoom call and commentate to everyone on the game.
Before you get to Lewis, I just got this impression now that Sky have got that huge picture of Nathan still about, haven't they?
Oh, yeah.
Five huge pictures of Nathan around the stadium, that'll do it.
Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah, that certainly will put off the opposition, if nothing else, because at least some of the Charlton players know what Nathan looks like already. Lewis, have you got plans afoot? I mean, I think I'm trying to work out. So if we're at that stage where you're allowed six people in your garden, social distance, set up the TV in the garden, set up like a massive amount of seats, like six seats, but obviously miles away from each other. You could have a couple of mates in your house, possibly, to watch it. Is that one way of doing it? I don't know. We don't know what the regulations will be like at the time, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's my plan anyway. Hopefully, you know, a lot of my friends that I go to the games with all live fairly locally, so can set up the TV in the garden, sit 2 metres apart. I've got a drum kit upstairs, so I can bring the drum down and get the chants going. It'd be great. We'd set up a little, like a little atmosphere, but... Yeah, the neighbours, I'm not sure the neighbours would be big fans of us when we're all singing songs, but yeah, I mean, it's going to be very weird. I feel for you guys, because like you said, Terry said the commentary and everything as well, it's going to be really weird. I mean, I can't remember the last time I watched as many games on TV for Charlton either. It's going to be really tough, and I just hope that it's only this night and we can get back in stadiums as soon as possible, because I know a lot of people are going to be missing Charlton right now, so... But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world, and at the weekend, being able to go down to Charlton, it's like a lot of people's escape, isn't it? Like the stresses of work or life or everything, you get to go and watch your football club in a stadium every Saturday. It's going to be tough for a couple of people, so hopefully we can, you know, maybe we're going to have the show on here, so hopefully people can tune in and get a little sense of community, even though we are going to all be watching it separately on the TV. And then hopefully it's not too long until we can get back down the valley and see everyone again and you know, carry on supporting the boys. But until then, we'll have to just make as much racket as we can from home. Hopefully, maybe all of you have to invest in some drums and we can get a load of chants going. But yeah, it's going to be strange. But at the end of the day, as long as we can watch our football club play, whether it be on a screen or in a stadium, it's going to be great to be able to see them again. And I'll be cheering them all the way to survival.
Excellent stuff. Right, I think we should end it there. It's been another good Charlton Live. I've enjoyed chatting to you boys. Thanks to Heather McKinley from the Trust who came on earlier, and to Lee Bowyer and to Jason Pearce for their interviews. Don't forget, if you haven't checked it out already, we released the fifth and final part of Steve Sutherland in conversation with Keith Peacock during the week. So make sure you go back and listen to all of those on your podcast feed. They're really, really fascinating about Keith's life and career, of course, with the club. We also re-released the full commentary from Wembley from last year on the anniversary on Tuesday. So if you want to reminisce about that as well, you can do so over on our Charlton Live feed. Right, thank you to Benji, to Terry and to Lewis for joining me this afternoon.
Cheers, no worries, mate. Cheers,
Lee. Cheers, boys. Stay safe.
Excellent stuff. And I've been Louis Mendes. Thanks for listening to Charlton Live. We'll be back here next week with, well, we'll find out what happens during the week. Good to speak to you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership.
Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.